My friend Dr. John Jackson, Paul Simon, Public Policy Institute, on the other end of the line this morning. John, good to hear from you. How have you been, pal?
Doing okay, Tom. Thanks.
You know,
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, and a lot of people looking forward to it. But we look back on 2020, and I'm curious, John. I've been kind of playing around with two ideas this morning, and I'm wondering whether we're going to agree. The biggest story in Illinois politics, sans COVID, what would it be in your mind, John?
I would say the graduated income tax and the problems of the budget and related issue, of course, closely related, is the whole question of the future of the Speaker of the House.
And you know what? You and I agree, because I was thinking when you look back and the ramifications and also what it means. Did Illinoisans say no to a fair tax? And the fact that the governor spent $56 million of his own money pushing this as well. But yeah, and what do you think that says to Springfield?
Well, one side won the argument, the other side lost the argument, and obviously the governor lost his argument for revamping what had been the code since the new 1970 Constitution. And it was a very successful drive by the Republicans to link everything that people didn't like about General Assembly or about Illinois government to their vote. And a lot of people decided that they didn't want to go there. The problem it leaves us, of course, is the budget issue is still there. And at that point, it was Plan A, and there was really not a Plan B that didn't entail a great deal of terrible suffering and harm and disruption and program cuts and things that people are not going to like. And that part has yet to be faced, I think.
Yeah, and you know, when I was reading the governor's comments during one of the COVID-19 updates, talking about he was already meeting with AFSCME, asking for furlough days, and on the list goes Department of Corrections, people saying, well, why do they always go to corrections first? But I think when you look at state of budget in Illinois and you look at the budget as a whole, I think maybe people don't appreciate how big of a portion of the pie education is. And once you take education, you put that off to the side, there's really not a lot else. When you look, I know there's a lot more, but education eats just a bunch of money here.
Well, K through 12 is by far the big one, yes. And we've got a formula now that was very difficult to arrive at, but that's going to do some good for lots of areas in rural high schools, for example. And all kinds of legislators on both sides of the aisle voted for that. If you put it off to the side, the only education dollars left are community colleges and universities. We all took a major hit already, and that's going to be tough. And not only that, there's really not very much money there in terms of how much is necessary to fill the gap. So lots of unpleasant possibilities and no good answers.
Yeah, and you know, when it gets right down to it, there's going to have to be some type of answer. Illinoisans looked at that fair tax, and I think, all right, in my personal, and it's anecdotal, is largely, look, they already raised the prices on gas. Look, they already increased the prices on license. They did this. They've already taken so much more in taxes. Enough is enough. That's how I kind of get it. As I said, anecdotally, was that your takeaway, too? Enough is enough?
Well, I think there was some of that. Of course, everything you just talked about is infrastructure and the gas tax and all of that, which is, in a real sense, separate from the issue of what the general fund's got to deal with. But, yeah, people don't make those distinctions, so probably that's the case.
And as you said, Mike Madigan, I think the other story as well, and that sudden and abrupt ending to the investigation committee, I think made people, well, they look up and they say, well, the fix is in. Welcome to Illinois. You know, and when it comes to all the things that are going on, I guess for euphemistically, you're saying, well, if there's smoke, there must be a fire.
Yeah, certainly the feds came hard after the speaker and people that had been around him for years, and that's still ongoing. And the difficult issue immediately needing to be faced is who's going to organize the House and who's going to be the Speaker. You have to do it. You have to organize. You have to have a Speaker. And that's very much up in the air right now.
You know, there was another thing that happened this year that I would have never thought, and you didn't bring it up, so I have to. Blagojevich commutation. I did not see it coming. Did not see it coming.
No, I thought that would happen. There, I mean, two showmen and two guys that understood one another.
Do you really think they understood one another? Well, and the reason why I watched The Apprentice show, and I never got that impression.
Well, you know, I think Trump understood the celebrity part of the Blagojevich appeal, and Blagojevich understood the celebrity a part of the Trump appeal. I thought they were very much on the same wavelength in lots of ways.
So, when it comes to the state of Illinois, there was another story that I think worthy of note, and that is the fight between where the governor's powers begin and end. It's been going on for months. It seems like this subject keeps getting batted back and forth, depending on which judge, which outcome you hear.
Yeah, but the judge in Sangamon County is the judge in charge of all the consolidated cases, and she's been pretty consistent and pretty clear. And so far, it looks like Pritzker has won way more than he has lost, and she's, I think, going to back him, and so is the Illinois Supreme Court, ultimately, is my conclusion.
And, of course, something you and I recently talked about was the census and its potential impact, and it looks as though the forecasting on that pretty much hit the nail on the head. We're going to lose some representation. But beyond that, there's another question, and a recent poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute shows that 64% of voters approve of an independent commission for redistricting.
Yeah, we have been in favor of that at the Institute for quite a long time, and it's been around for a long time. It may be that its time has come. We'll see how that works out, and that depends, number one, on the outcome of the Speaker decision we were just talking about, number two, on what the governor then decides to do.
And here's the thing, and they both intersect.
Yes.
Things are so contentious right now, right? It's a showdown at the OK Corral that when you talk about the Speaker vote and redistricting, that if somebody has power, they're not going to give it up. Not now. There's not going to be any concessions, I don't think, unless somebody goes out and really makes some type of concerted effort, some altruistic concerted effort. Things are so contentious on the state and federal level that I don't see anybody giving up any power, that they figure, you know, if I can get it and if I have to knock you down to get it, I'll take it. I wonder. Right now, I just don't see people saying, you know what, now's the time for an independent committee. No, there's a fight going on here.
Yeah, and this whole Speaker and who's organizing the House decision comes first. And it's not just Speaker Madigan. It's the General Assembly on both sides of the aisle are very reluctant to give up that right that they have to determine where those district lines are drawn. And, of course, what they do first and foremost is take care of incumbents on both sides. And there are some districts that are going to be red no matter what, others that are going to be blue no matter what. The issue is, are you going to create enough competitive districts? And that's always been the difficult thing for the General Assembly to do.
I was recently talking to Dr. Paul Jacobs, new to be a state representative, and I really didn't realize that this Speaker of the House vote is a showdown. You've got to have enough votes, and you stay there until you do. I forgot what year he said. Maybe you'll remember, Paul. I think it was 76 or 78 votes before they got a Speaker.
Yeah, the old story is 1976 coming into 77, and we had a horse in that race, that is Clyde Schoch, had the most votes initially and couldn't really quite get over the top. Ultimately, Bill Redman was made Speaker by both Democrats and some Republicans who had to vote for him to break the impasse. So that's one possible scenario, although unlikely if there's a stalemate.
Yeah, because you always feel like if there's a party that comes into a situation prepared, it's the Democrats in the state of Illinois.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to leave that up to an element of chance. I don't see that happening. I just don't.
No, I absolutely, I agree with you.
And, of course, the number one story this year, sans COVID, as we said politically, was the presidential race.
Right.
And the presidential, and I see this as a triad, and you really can't separate them, although people do. The president, who controls the Senate, who controls the House, all these things are in play. And a lot of money. I mean, we talked about the governor spending $58.6 million. There was no shortage of money being splashed around this year. Florida, right? When you take a look at Bloomberg, how much money he sent there and how much was spent on, I think it was seven House races. The Democrats spent around $316 million to take over. They didn't win a single one of those. You know, and when it comes to this showdown, well, it's not truly over until next week in Georgia. But, you know, the presidential election, we haven't seen anything like it. And there's a large group of people who are not accepting the outcome.
Well, this is going to be known as one of those historic years that summarizes all of the bad stuff that makes it historic. 1861, the start of the Civil War, total breakdown of our system. 1941, Pearl Harbor, the start of World War II. 1963, the assassination of John Kennedy, 2001, 9/11, terrorism, and then 2020, massive loss of life, unprecedented loss of life, our institutions tested in ways they've never been before, the whole economic damage, and then what you were referring to, the deep polarization, and our institutions are under attack and under stress, and they have held just barely so far up to and including what happened this week, where the Congress did what Congress has to do, which is to study and produce defense bill, study and produce a COVID bill, and they did so bipartisanship compromise. That's the way the American system has to work, Tom, and it worked over this last couple of weeks, and yet we still teetered on the brink of disaster. So we've been tested and are continuing to be tested in our institutions in the deepest possible level. Can we survive this polarization? And a separation of power system won't work if we're this deeply polarized, and if people don't understand how the elections work, and I've said it on your show before and many times, pointed to those county clerks, Democrats and Republicans, people who volunteer to work in those courthouses and work in those polling places, Democrats and Republicans all there, and they do a great job. And the question is, will this system work again? I think it worked and produced an outcome. And I'm disheartened that this many people don't really understand what was involved and want to believe in these conspiracies.
Media.
That's a long answer to the back to your question.
No, and I, quite frankly, I thought it was a great summation. And but there was one component: media distrust also plays a role in what you and I just spoke about. What people are seeing or hearing has become they don't trust them. They don't trust major news networks.
Well, yeah, but you don't have to trust major news networks to know about how you got your ballot, how your ballot was handled, how the county clerks worked to make this stuff happen, how many of us have had the experience of being poll workers. That all happened, and hundreds of thousands and millions of Americans in a very decentralized system made it all work. And there's really not been any evidence of all this charge about the ballots being manipulated and all of that. I can explain that if we have time.
Well, you know, I even wish we did, but we're running out of time. But when it comes to this distrust, they have their own sources of information now. And a lot of people saying, look at this video. What am I seeing here? How can this math exist? You know, and then the rules for COVID, you know, and mail-in ballots. There was a lot of void that people can interject their own thoughts in, and they did. They did just that. And there, but that mistrust, you and I talked about this the last time. The integral part of what you're just talking about and what John says, look, we know how these systems work, or at least most people do, and they should. People who don't should. But it does. It, at this point, it doesn't matter. The contentious nature of this, they're going to say no. I've got I've got enough evidence in my...
There have been well over 50 law cases brought on this very issue, and without exception, one exception, all of them have been decided that there was no evidence of any tinkering of any size with the ballots.
And see, and that's interesting, because at the same time, people say, well, the courts are in on it, too.
Well, the courts are filled with people who've been Democrats and Republicans put in by either the electors or by the president. And, you know, you got to trust the court system to get to the conclusion. And it has almost unanimously gotten to the conclusion that people can trust the outcome of this particular vote nationwide and locally.
Mm-hmm. John, any other final thoughts before I let you go? When you try to surmise this year, because of its nature, it seems to blur in memory, although I thought you did a pretty articulate job picking up some thoughts for the year without COVID in them. This, you know, because you just talked about the systems being under attack, and I was talking about even the judges. People don't trust the judges anymore. You know, and they see different subjects come at them from social media constantly. They call it doom scrolling now. John, have you heard this? When you're going down Facebook and just looking for all the disaster and through Twitter, you know, and you're just scrolling through the doom, I think, grief, the emotional state in which this country finds it in, from grief from COVID, frustration with the politics, the stimulus checks, how that's addressed. There is so much that people are emotionally overwhelmed, logically overwhelmed, and I don't know what the outcome is, but I know we will be paying for it for a great deal of time.
Well, 2021's looking up. Our institutions have held, been stressed and battered, but are holding and are doing what they're supposed to do by and large. We have a vaccine that is on its way, and it shows what the federal government can do and should do when it mobilizes its resources, and that's ultimately the only way out of the pandemic, and we're going to get there. And so I'm optimistic that 2021 will be much closer to a normal year and not one of those years like 2020, again, known just by saying 2020, you know exactly what all that was entailed, just like 1861 or 1941. I think we can hopefully forget about 2020 as 2021 progresses.
Well, I hope you're right. Dr. John Jackson, Paul Simon, Public Policy Institute. I hope you had a great holiday and Happy New Year, John. I enjoy your optimism, by the way. I hope I can kind of get some through osmosis, but I really do appreciate your time, John.
Happy New Year to you and all your listeners out there, Tom. I always appreciate being able to visit with your listeners.